Hi, welcome to Juicing the People versus O.J. Simpson, the talk show that juices the 2016 television drama, The People versus O.J. Simpson.
American Crime Story.
I'm your host, Adam Papagan.
And I'm J.J. Stratford. Every week, we fact-check the television drama and compare it against our memories as Los Angeles natives who grew up in the middle of the ultimate media circus.
Images seen in tonight's episode are the real-life images of the trial as printed in the Los Angeles Times and various tabloid publications. How you doing, JJ?
Great.
I'm doing great, too. I can't believe the series is almost over.
I know, and we're like fully immersed in it.
Fully immersed, but still have only scratched the surface.
Well, I don't know.
We're immersed in surface.
Yeah. But now we can be free of the series. We don't have to critique anything. Mm-hmm. We can, like, actually go deeper.
In 2 weeks. Right now we're still immersed in the series.
Yeah, we're still episodic.
But in general, immersed in OJ.
Yeah. Whatever you say.
Whatever I say. Well, I say thank you to our OJ sponsor, FarmBox.com. Fresh produce and juice right to your door. Check out FarmBox. We're going to drink. John Noble, one of our two or three fans, made a great video of us.
I love that video. Thank you.
It's a great video, drinking the juice. And we're going to drink some more right now. There you go. And, you know, he can make another one from this
episode. I was surprised when he did the supercut that we drink it so delicately.
They're small cups.
I know.
I think if it was a big cup, just mm-hmm. be gulping it down. But
don't squeeze the juice.
Here's to the juice. Ooh, good this week.
It's very tart.
I'm glad I get it this week.
Oh, yeah. Is it your week to
keep
the juice?
It's my week to get the juice.
We have to share the juice.
We share the juice. We split the juice. But it always works out.
Yeah.
So what's been going on in the world of OJ this week?
Well, I think people want to know about... We went to the Q&A with the writers and creators of the series.
That's right. And moderated by Charlotte's husband.
Which I still can't believe.
Of all the people on the show, they got him?
Of all the people, the one that you're the biggest fan of.
I don't know if I'm the biggest fan. I like him a lot. He's a good actor. Nice guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, they answered a lot of our questions. They're OJ nuts too.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them went to Palisades High School, my alma mater. It's so LA, so OJ.
So OJ. It was really interesting because it was in a small video store theater in the back of a video store. How many people do you think were there?
30.
And Adam and I sat in the front row.
The very front row.
Very front. So when we asked questions, they were sitting right in front of us.
And we probably asked the most questions. Well, I don't think anyone else asked more than one question.
We asked several questions, enough that Larry... I forget his last name. Yeah, sorry. It's like, anyway, he came up straight up to us afterwards. And it's like, what's up with you two? Like, you know way too much about O.J. Simpson.
And he had heard of the O.J. tour.
He had, but he hadn't heard of our podcast.
No. But now he has.
Now he has.
So what did we glean from this interaction?
Well, I didn't know that these two, I knew that they did Big Eyes and I knew they did Larry Flint, mm-hmm. and then what's the other Tim Burton movie they did?
Did they know the Tim Burton movie?
Yeah. But I didn't know that they made all the Problem Child movies.
You can kind of see some of the Problem Child influence.
Yeah, and then I felt, oh, geez, I just wasn't seeing it right because we were just making fun of the juror Fuhrer when they were saying another one bites the dust, mm-hmm. when they're the musical montage. That's so Problem Child. So I'm going to retract. I said it was cheesy, but now I think it's genius. It's these writers' mark, I think.
They really took all of their experience in Hollywood into the show. It's the first time they did TV. They wanted to do it right. And I think they really succeeded. So what did we learn? They talked about that they couldn't. So some of the reason that things are different on the show than are factual is because they couldn't get the rights.
Right, like they couldn't get the rights to Geraldo, so that's why they used A Current Affair.
Mm-hmm. They made up the thing about Michael Jackson and Lime Green.
Yeah, we asked them all this other stuff, and they just offered up that they made up that one.
And they were talking about different scenes they wanted to include. Do you remember those?
Well, I remember that Larry was telling me all about Dominic Dunn's adventure off to England with Princess Diana.
Right.
And he was telling me the story, and I already knew it. And I think halfway through him telling me, he was like, this girl already knows this story.
Yeah, Dominic Dunn always wanted to interview Princess Di, and so he got permission to leave the court to go interview Princess Di. And all she wanted to know about was OJ.
I think Dominic Dunn must have known in him that that's all she wanted to know about.
He finally had something to offer her.
Yeah.
That was his dream interview, and he finally, thanks to Ito.
What a great thing to be able to talk to Princess Diana about, too.
She probably knows details about the case that she took to her grave.
You think?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Because it was fresh in his mind.
And it's also, she was queen of the tabloids, and he was like OJ's king of the tabloids. They were often, just right here, yeah, look. Diana caught on sex video. And then there's Nicole. So they were often sharing the covers of the tabloids.
OJ loved blondes.
He did.
And then Charlotte's husband, Evan Handler, who was in Frogmen, and he was being coy about it for a little bit. He kind of like, yeah, I was in Frogmen. And so anyway.
Yeah, they were kind of downplaying it a little bit at first, that he had been in Frogmen, even though it's the most mind-blowing thing of the entire series.
There's so many weird dualities in this, though. Like the guy who heard the plaintive wail of the Akita, Pablo Finavez, ghost wrote OJ's confession book. And then two Catos, two Broncos. But this is just another one of those OJ dualities.
Two Roberts.
Robert Shapiro, Robert Kardashian.
Yeah, doubles everything.
Yeah. Double OJ. Double indemnity.
Double Jeopardy.
Double Jeopardy. But yeah, so Evan Handler, I asked him about it. He did give up some details.
You asked a really good question, though. Do you remember what you asked?
I just asked him what his, as someone who worked with OJ recently, what his interpretation of as it was happening, right? Was that it? Yeah. I didn't really realize as I was asking.
Yeah, you just asked him, like, as a person who has, like, worked with him from, like, a non-celebrity point of view, what his opinion was at the time, hearing about it. And, well, he said that he'd just worked with OJ, but then he was on an airplane during the Bronco chase, so he kind of missed it.
But when he heard that Nicole had been murdered, his first thought was, oh, I feel bad for OJ. He wanted to get back with his ex-wife, and now she's dead.
Yeah, I guess everyone on the set of the Frogmen was going through a divorce or a breakup.
Mm-hmm.
So they all were kind of, all the actors were kind of bonding about their, like.
And he described OJ as the coach in the locker room.
That's right. He also said that OJ wasn't as impressed with OJ Simpson as he had expected. He thought he was a little bit bland in person.
But he did tell a story about going to the airport with OJ and being impressed by how OJ could get whatever he wanted at the airport.
That's right. He said, well, he put it in good context. He said that in this day and age, like, even though he was an actor, he was sort of like unknown out on the street. And then just celebrity was so much of a bigger deal then, so much more rare to be that level of celebrity. So when he'd walked into the airport, they just like, people just start mobbing him. And then they just found like, there's like this whole other secret wing of the airport for celebrities, which I didn't know that.
Well, in the 90s. It's true, though.
Now can pay. It's like Virgin Atlantic or something now.
Celebrity was a bigger deal in the past, though.
Yeah.
And so, nostalgia. That's what OJ is all about. It's about nostalgia.
Yeah.
For a simpler time.
It does make me kind of nostalgic for when fame was rare.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody thinks they're famous because they have followers. But you have to actually like win a Heisman and kill someone to be famous.
And be in the Naked Gun.
Naked Gun.
Hertz Rent-A-Car. So many other credits.
Workout videos.
Workout video. We'll get to the workout video.
Yeah.
And then I know Sally wanted to know about Robert Kardashian's role and like kind of why they overdid it. They were a little, the creators were a little, because you asked them why they had him open the bag.
I kind of asked them like as if it were a like a press conference with the president. I kind of challenged, the first question out of the gate, I sort of challenged them. I asked them why they wrote in the script that AC and Robert Kardashian open up the bag when there's tons of documentation that they never open the bag.
And what was their answer?
They said that they wanted to show Robert was like the loyal friend. He was the voice of reason. I think in a Greek myth or in, you know, a screenwriting class, you have to have that character. And I think obviously no one else in the Dream Team was like that. Mm-hmm.
They also kind of avoided the question though.
Yeah.
Very OJ.
Very OJ, yeah.
But they did say that after the trial, their relationship was pretty much over, Kardashians and OJ. Mm-hmm. And they did know about Marsha Clark's past as a Scientologist and her ex-husband.
Yeah, they said, okay, what do you guys think we should have included? Because we were obviously asking a lot of questions. And I said I was disappointed they didn't include that Marsha Clark was a Scientologist.
It would have been such a juicy thing to drop in.
Yeah, just a hint at Xenu or the Celebrity Center. Because both of her husbands were Scientologists, mm-hmm. not just the second one.
One was full on Sea Org.
Yeah, second one. The one that's suing her in the show. Sea Org.
What a jerk. But that moment between her and Darden in the hallway of the hotel, in the trip to Oakland, that all really happened.
Oh, yeah.
I think all the big details on the show really must have
happened. I think they also admitted that if anything were a fan fiction in the show, it's the Marsha and Chris Darden thing, that people really want it to believe they're the romance novel. They're the racial harmony of the story.
But they're so coy about it.
What do you mean, in interviews?
In real life.
Yeah. Have you seen Chris Darden answer Oprah when she asks him?
Mm-mm. What does he say?
He's like, so he just says, Marsha's a very beautiful woman. Any guy would like her if they were around her.
Mm, yeah.
But then she asks him they actually had sex, and then he's kind of coy. He doesn't actually answer the question. But he doesn't deny it either, so.
They could have made out. That's enough for me.
Yeah. Or they could have just worked together.
No, there's more going on.
Because this story can't just be on the surface. Everything has mm-hmm. to have a secret.
Absolutely. You're finally getting it. Other OJ news, if you have enjoyed the 10-part FX miniseries, Esquire Network, which, did you even know that was a network?
I didn't know.
It's a network. Esquire Magazine has a network. 12-part miniseries about OJ next. So this just keeps going. Martin Sheen, it was just announced today, is making a miniseries about how OJ is innocent. It's only going to be 6 parts, but we're looking at 18 more hours of this.
All right.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So juicing, even after the People versus O.J. Simpson American Crime Story ends, juicing will continue. At least until we get Cato.
At least until we get Cato.
The show will continue till Cato. Half past Cato.
We just have a lot more things to talk about that we can't get into every episode.
Endlessly fascinating.
Yeah. And we wind up in TV ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're just like the Kardashian kids. I will say for Sally's behalf that the creators just, I think they just had a soft spot for Robert Kardashian, the way, you know, like that predicament of like, your best friend killed my best friend. It tore our family apart. He's very soap opera-y, very tragic.
Everyone kind of has a different person from the case they identify with.
Yeah.
Mine's Tyson Bailey. No, Cato. I don't know. I like them all. I like them all. Oh, and then they also were just like, when somebody was talking about Kim Goldman, they're like, ugh, Kim.
They didn't want to talk about the Goldmans either.
The Goldmans suck. It's hard to say that without sounding cold because Ron did die and nobody should be murdered, whatever. But like, he seemed like kind of a crappy person. And that means Kim probably sucks.
It's just Kim. It's not Fred. Fred's just...
He raised them.
Yeah.
Bratty kids. cocky, as my dad would say.
The mustache.
That mustache is weird.
You're not going to start waxing.
It's a little bit, it's shorter now. And when he's on TV now, it's shorter, but it's the same.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Goldmans. That's maybe in a future episode, a whole one about the Goldmans.
Oh, the last thing I want to say about when we met the creators is that we stopped Evan Handler at the very end because I just had one question, which was to end this rumor that in the Frogmen, in the opening scene, I asked him if O.J. Simpson slices a woman's neck open. He said that wasn't not in the script.
Mm-mm. So it was good to get that.
Yeah, I was like, he solved the conspiracy there. Mm-hmm.
Good to get, you know, because he's
first-hand info.
Primary source.
Yeah.
Which is rare in the O.J. case, a primary source.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of hearsay, a lot of objections in the courtroom. But let's get into this week's episode.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there's a lot in this episode. So it opens up with the exercise tape. Well, first, A Current Affair. When they were doing that triangle graphic, I was like, oh, I bet JJ's loving this. Is that your favorite part?
No.
It wasn't?
No.
You didn't like the triangle graphic?
Because I'm nitpicking, but they did it with, like, new technology.
Oh, that wasn't the real Current Affair?
It's not the real Current Affair, and, like, they didn't get the 90s video graphics, right? But I'm a stickler about that type of video graphics. It's my own weird thing.
Okay.
It's good. I was glad that it was in there.
Okay. Well, all good. So Current Affair, they talk about how OJ was injured from football. This was another great Easter egg. Couldn't have done the stabbing because of his football injury.
Right.
But there's actually a video from the day of the murders at Paul Revere Middle School during the dance recital. A guy had his camcorder. He's visiting from out of town. He saw OJ. And it's like, oh, my friends back home might want to look at OJ. He videotaped OJ lifting his kids up above his head.
Oh, that's right.
So they were able to shut that down from the defense's side. And then they talk about the exercise video. What do you know about the exercise video?
I wish I had brought it tonight, but it was filmed at OJ's house like 4 days before the murders. I'll put it on our Facebook page. There's really good outtakes on the VHS tape that prove that he's totally able-bodied, but loopy in the head.
Was on pills or cocaine?
Well, I don't know. I listened to Chris Darden on Oprah, and he said that they actually did test OJ for drugs, but they didn't find anything.
But pills got out of your system in a couple days.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
And they didn't test it for steroids.
Why does he need to be on steroids? He wasn't playing anymore. Yeah. But there might be like residual effects of steroids. I don't know. So, yeah, I want to see that workout tape. Is it on? It was released?
I have it.
So it's officially released?
No. It got subpoenaed. The footage got subpoenaed. But of course, in typical O.J. Simpson fashion, it didn't come out as a workout tape. It came out as the subpoenaed videotape you want to see. Like, it was sold more like how they sell alien conspiracy videos.
It's on VHS? You can get it? Okay. Yeah, I've never seen it.
Includes all the outtakes where he's acting really insane.
That's great. Well, yeah, put that on our page.
Yeah, it's really good.
I want to see that.
But the crazy thing is, he doesn't really teach the workout. He's like, this. He gives you a speech, and this is. He shows you around his house, and then when they actually go to work out, this little guy is the actual teacher, and then OJ just makes jokes like, "This isn't too hard. I like this."
Hey, reminds me of playing for USC. Uh-huh. Like that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Classic OJ.
Mm-hmm.
He's in great shape, though.
Yeah.
And this was his real house?
No, I think it's like, that's probably a soundstage, but he walks around the house, and there's in-between things with, like, a girl in a bikini, like, lifting weights, and then him in the foreground going, like, stuff like that.
Good stuff.
Subpoenaed footage.
So the episode gets going underway. Effley Bailey waxing nostalgic about the South. That was weird. That's like the most lines Nathan Lane has had in the whole series.
Yeah, they're like, oh no, it's almost over. We gotta like give him some screen time. They do put little hints of his alcoholism. They're becoming more and more.
He's talking about bourbon.
Yeah, mint juleps, everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Effley Bailey alcohol stuff in this episode. But Johnny Cochran, by the way, the acting on this show is really good. I mean, it's got John Travolta. It's got Oscar winner Cuba Gooding Jr. And the guy who plays Darden, I forget the actor's name, but he's really good. I notice that every week. But this week, with Johnny Cochran's part, Courtney, whatever that guy's name is, I realized he might be the best actor on the show. Because when I'm watching that, I forget that he's acting. I'm like, oh yeah, there's Johnny Cochran. Like, he just is totally, like, that part. I don't know. I thought he was great.
Yeah, he's got real wild emotions. Like, he's, like, blowing up all the time in this episode.
So, when they went to North Carolina, that really happened. All the stuff on the series really happened. Like, they're not... It's the details. They didn't... Aren't exactly perfect. But they did travel to North Carolina to subpoena the Mark Furman tapes. And they did go together, Effley Bailey and Johnny Cochran. One part I liked is before they went, when the Dream Team was together and they're like debating it and they're talking about screenwriting.
Yeah, I was like, no, that's those writers. That's yeah. Their little joke.
They're like, how are you going to teach screenwriting? You never sold a screenplay.
And then it like pans back and there's just like a table of people discussing that.
Mm-hmm. That was a little weird. That
was a writer's Easter egg.
Mm-hmm.
Writer's process.
Are they mad because they've never taught a class, do you think?
Yeah, they're bitter against people that are teaching classes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that lady's screenplay was really good.
If it had I think it probably is. I mean, I don't know. It sounds like Bad Lieutenant or something.
I bet had all those details from Mark Furman.
The script is called Men Against Women.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Is that available?
I don't... Oh, I think she did publish a book later about it. I gotta read it.
She's terrible.
No, but it's called Men Against... Do you know what Men Against Women is?
Mm-mm.
This kind of goes along with... Maybe this is like the backstory of the Furman tapes. But Mark Furman, when he was single, went to some coffee shop and he saw this woman outside typing on a laptop.
In Westwood. It was LA. In Westwood. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know the rest.
Yeah.
And then in those days, it was really weird to see someone typing on a laptop. And I also think Mark Furman was like a playboy. He just started chatting her up
mm-hmm.
about the thing. And he said he was a cop. And she said, I've always wanted to write a cop movie. And then they exchanged numbers, and you know, she asked, like, oh, can I ever interview you or whatever? So they started working on this screenplay together, and they were having casual sex. So I think it was, like, a little bit kinky.
Mm.
I don't know. I just finished Murder in Brentwood. Mm-hmm. You read it, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's kind of... I was hesitant to read it because the whole beginning is, like, a racist apology. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of put it down because I just felt bad about reading it, but... It's probably the most damning book of the LAPD.
Well, of course that racist cop will sell out his own guys. Furman.
I didn't really think he was selling them out. I think he's just talking about how, through his own tales of working as a police officer, it shows you how corrupt and how there's just kind of too many egos in a police department.
But he was like one of the people. He's one of the people making it corrupt. Just because you're like, oh yeah, everyone's corrupt, doesn't mean you're not corrupt too.
Okay, well, okay, so also going back further, in 1983, Mark Furman actually filed a disability claim, and he wanted to be let to have some time off because he was having too many violent episodes.
Right.
I think I have some notes here, but he was like asking for time off because he was like punching people and doing all this all of these like horrible things. And you know, I think that like given what he saw, he probably just started to go crazier and crazier.
Mm.
I don't think that there's like good counseling for police officers.
No, there's not.
And it's just, I don't know, it's very corrupt. But also, so Furman worked at this, at the police, in the West LA police station. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I believe he's racist, but proven by how sexist he is. So when they talk about what happened with Margaret York, Ito's wife.
Yeah.
Well, she was his commanding officer.
Yeah, and she disciplined him.
Yeah.
For writing KKK.
Yeah, so someone defaced a Martin Luther King poster in the station. And after roll call, she came in and started to reprimand all the officers for defacing whoever to deface it to come forward. And Mark Furman was in the back just talking over Margaret York, just talking to his friend all loud while she was giving this like important speech. So she called him into the office and everyone blamed him because he was being so disrespectful in the speech. They just sort of, she like forced him to sign something.
That
he did it, yeah.
Yeah, the guy who collects Nazi medals was framed for not liking MLK.
Well, Men Against Women comes from all these police officers in the West LA division just didn't think women should be police officers. They just thought they didn't have the experience and weren't tough enough to work the streets. They had no business being there. So he had a major problem with Margaret York just because she was the commanding officer. And in his book, he's just constantly talking about how she is not qualified for that job, but she's never worked the streets. She has no experience.
Where do you stand?
He doesn't respect her whatsoever.
Where do you stand on that issue?
What?
Women being police officers.
I think women can be police officers.
Even if they've never worked the streets?
I think a woman in the streets was probably good. Maybe they won't take out their gun. Mm. Maybe they'll talk to somebody. Maybe they'll listen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll like ease the situation down.
Sing it, sister. Yeah,
yeah,
I agree. I don't like Furman.
So I think Furman was just like telling this woman, the screenwriter, all these stories about the LAPD. And it's actually like, I think it's him just like working through all that anger and racism. And of course, anybody writing a script about the LAPD, of course they're racist.
I never heard those tapes, and I'm sure that the one on the show, although I didn't like on the show how he was saying it, like he was giving a speech about how racist he was, not like conversational. That would have been.
It's more the stuff that on the tapes is more like him talking like he's a badass cop, like super bad lieutenant.
Trying to impress her?
Yeah. Trying to be like a fetishy, like scary cop.
That was crazy though when there was just that story about him beating up all those guys. And then did you find details about that?
Yes. On beating suspects, we basically tortured them. There were four police officers, four guys. We broke them. Their faces were just mush. They had pictures on the wall with blood all the way to the ceiling and finger marks from trying to crawl out of the room. That particular passage refers to a specific incident in Boyle Heights on November 18th, 1978.
Whoa.
Boyle Heights is where we tape the show.
That's right. We're in Boyle Heights right now.
We're in like... Better watch out for cops.
But this isn't a black neighborhood, though.
He doesn't like Mexicans either.
Mm, that makes sense. If you wouldn't like one, you wouldn't like the other. Mm-hmm. But then they're like washing their hands with the hose.
Oh, yeah. He says like they don't get blood. You can't see blood on a dark blue uniform. You just wash your hands and then you go out and direct traffic.
That's not. See, there's certain details like that, even translated later onto this, you know, fictional show or whatever, that have to be real. Like, you wouldn't know that kind of thing if you weren't beating up suspects.
Yeah, and I think when he's talking to the screenwriter, he's telling her these things that police officers don't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They try to act like they was going to save a kitten out of a tree, but...
But in Murder in Brentwood, he tries to make it seem like he was only talking about a fictional script.
I think what he's saying... Not really. I think he's saying, like, this is what it's like when you're a police officer and you worked. I mean, he did, like, work with gangs and, like, he'd been a cop for really long, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just went to, I mean, if you're already racist and you're dealing with all kinds of, but so Margaret York, she wanted to reprimand him, so she moved him out of West LA and put him in Pacific Palisades.
Mm-hmm.
And she put him on the day shift.
Well, there's no action.
There's no action. And she gave him a black female police officer as a partner. Post wife is so awesome.
Yeah, she's cool. They should have done a mistrial, though.
They absolutely should have been a mistrial. Because as soon as the Furman tapes come up, it really isn't about Ron and Nicole anymore.
Uh-huh.
And also, I don't know, I think that it would have been nice if Johnny Cochran had lived to, like, defend someone like Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that the O.J. Simpson case isn't actually the best case for him. He should have tried to take down the LAPD or, like, he should have, like, gone after the police. He had enough money, defended enough celebrities.
Maybe absolutely.
With that information. Also, so Mark Furman, he's not... Murder in Brentwood's really good. Way better than Dominic Dunn's book.
Best O.J. book.
Best O.J. book.
Of the 160. Although I like O.J. A to Z.
But that's like a knowledge aid. It's not really a tale.
It kind of, you know, a book like this, though, if you read it cover to cover, a story does come out. No, seriously.
It's true. No, yes.
And themes emerge in the point of view of the author. So, I don't know. I really, this is pretty succinct.
We're going to have to make a best of books list.
OJ Library.
OJ, best of the OJ Library.
What do you think the best, the rarest OJ book is? Apparently the
favorite
one.
Book.
Yeah, it's expensive now.
Yeah, I don't own it because it's expensive. Yeah.
Oh, you don't own it?
No, I just have the book on tape, which is good because she reads it. But yeah, in print, it's a bit expensive.
13 hours of taped interviews. They use the N-word a lot in this episode.
Yeah. I do want to say that Mark Furman's not totally off the hook. Because he was, like, defending Darren Wilson on Fox TV.
Who's Darren Wilson?
He's who shot Michael Brown.
Oh. Yeah.
Of course he'd side with the police.
Yeah.
On that one.
I don't know. I'm not trying to defend Mark Furman either, but I also feel like if you mess with a cop, cops don't have a right to kill you, but also you're taking your life in your own hands for messing with a group of people who kill and get away with it on a daily basis. So from Furman's point of view, he's like, yeah, why would you mess with one of us? We kill people all the time. So I get it, but yeah. But it was like Nathan Lane said in this episode, it takes a certain character to be hated by both sides.
Oh yeah, I love that line.
That was a good line. So what else was going on in this episode?
There's Ito's wife.
That's like the only picture of her.
Yeah.
How did they meet? Do you know anything about...
I don't know how they met. Does Ito have a book?
No. Ito kind of learned his... This trial is a lot about learning lessons the hard way.
Yeah.
He really retreated into... He stopped courting the spotlight.
When his wife came into the story, that's just, like, too far. Now that even the judge has, like, tabloid drama.
Dominic Dunn called an airport paperback. More Larry King.
More Larry King. He's wearing a wig. He goes... you notice?
No.
Yeah.
It's funny wigs in the show.
Funny wigs.
The wig master on the show. Larry King must, when he's shooting those scenes of the Larry King show, he must be so like, oh, those are my best days. I feel bad for Larry King. I want to know his perspective on all this.
Larry King on Larry King Live.
Yeah.
That would be really good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all he's doing is hosting that show at McDonald's.
Do you think that Ito's wife lied so he could get on the... to do the case?
Yeah, of course.
Because she signed a paper that says she doesn't remember Furman. But according to Furman, they had several run-ins. She reprimanded him. She reassigned him.
But also, wasn't she...
like three different things of dramas.
Concerned that that would come out?
I'm sure when she signed the thing, though, she didn't think that Furman was going to become the...
the focal point of the end of the trial. But what was her backup plan if he did?
I don't know. Ask Peggy. Do you know what's with Ito and the timepieces?
Oh, the hourglasses. Yeah.
He has so many of them on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that about him, but I'm curious what the interest is.
That's probably just his quirk. Like, judges are allowed to... because that's their courtroom, their bench.
That's like a poetic reason, right?
They're allowed to keep like crap. You know, like you go into an office and people have like action figures on their desk or whatever, Weebles or like whatever.
He's like a hoarder.
Yeah. The hoarder judge. So
there was a lot of fights fighting going on in the elevators. Mm-hmm. The Dream Team has a fight in the elevator, and then they cut to the elevator fight with Darden mm-hmm. and Marcia.
It was a metaphor for being between two places.
Being in a safe place where you can talk about the case.
Mm-hmm.
There's no cameras.
Ito was threatening to charge everyone with contempt in this episode. He should have just done it. Seemed like an empty threat. I'll hold you in contempt.
They really should have had a mistrial. They didn't want to waste the taxpayers' money. And they didn't want to read. Everyone was. So it's not just the jurors who are tired of it.
But if they don't win, it is a waste of the taxpayers' money.
True.
So, I mean, is it worth it to spend a couple more million dollars?
They probably could have won the case if they didn't do anything with the glove.
Mm-hmm.
They could have won it without the glove. It's kind of shocking. There was enough evidence.
But then if they did do a mistrial, how do you find another jury who wasn't watching all this on TV? Would have been impossible. It's tough. It was,
I don't know what double jeopardy is, do you?
Yeah. So basically, you can't be charged for the same crime twice. If you're found innocent, they can't retry you with new evidence.
Uh-huh.
So now OJ could say, yeah, you know what? I did kill Ron and Nicole. And they wouldn't be able to try him if he confessed now. Because he was being charged with the murder of these two people. He was found not guilty. So it's done. So that's what double jeopardy is. So they were worried about that. But I think if there's a mistrial, they can retry it. I don't know. Do you think that it would have been as big of a deal if there was a mistrial and then it would have been if the city just dropped it?
Oh, and it wasn't a case at all?
Yeah. That happens sometimes. They'll make a mistrial and they'll be, it's not worth it.
The Menendez brothers had a mistrial.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way to get off. But it seemed like the defense was worried that they wouldn't win in a mistrial. Some of both sides were worried about it. There's a lot of that where both sides seems like they're losing because they know things the other side doesn't. Or they're seeing different things.
Yeah.
But there absolutely should have been a mistrial. How did it even get to that point, though? I don't know. It was nuts.
I think as soon as you're on camera, things change. I think it's like all the stuff of them just like turning up the volume. What is it? Turning up the pressure, mm-hmm. as the Dream Team said.
Yeah.
I think that's just like it starts to like create a feedback loop. You're causing things out into the world and the weight comes back at you.
That was cool when Johnny was inciting a riot.
Release the tapes!
That scene was not shot at First AME Church. That's another building that's on like 3rd Street. I recognize the building.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But they had that like fake First AME Church
sign.
Yeah,
you could see the like hand painted sign. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would have been cool if there was a second riot. I mean, you know, some people would have died and like a lot of property damage, but you know, 20 years on, the world would be a cooler place.
Yeah, except, I don't know, after the riots, they sort of just blamed the people. Didn't really make anybody, like, progress. Obviously, look, police are still beating people up.
Mm-hmm. But you're hearing about it now? Whereas before you wouldn't?
Yeah. I'm not saying that it wasn't, the Ronnie King case deserved to have a riot. Of course there's a riot, but...
The riots were cool. I say now. Here's later.
You say now. Yeah. I had someone pull a shotgun on me during the LA riots.
You don't think that's a cool experience?
My senior year of high school, getting like a shotgun pulled on you is kind of freaky.
Right, at the time. But looking back, that's not a cool experience. You don't ever like brag about it? Well, I had a shotgun pulled on me.
I don't know. My last year of high school was like very violent. There was a drive-by at the prom, so I saw somebody die. At the prom. I just watched someone like get killed right in front of me. Me and all my friends at the high. This is crazy. LA was bad in the 90s.
LA in the 90s.
A kid tried to sell me a gun in the cooking class too, gangster. I was like, no, but maybe that radio.
Why did he think you would want a gun? Or that was just
because it was like school was during the riots. We weren't in school for 2 weeks. They shut down the school. So when we came back, he's like, hey, you might need. He's like, Marsha Brady, you might need this.
Do you see him at your high school reunion?
I didn't go to that. Yeah.
Well, we wish them the best.
Yeah.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Name drop of the week. Did you have anything?
Name drop of the week is like the N-word.
That was dropped too many times to be a name drop. I thought the name drop of the week, which I didn't say, but it was a reference, Greta Van Susteren.
Oh, yeah, real quick. Yes, mm-hmm. She was on the...
It was a visual name drop.
Visual
name. They didn't say Greta
Van Susteren. I thought that, too. I thought maybe her...
Said the N-word a lot, though. That was cool when Furman was on the stand, Darden, like, walked out of the courtroom.
Oh, yeah.
That probably happened. Furman had a lawyer, though, telling him to not answer the questions, though.
Yeah. I don't know why that wasn't in the show.
They have to pay another actor.
Right.
Doesn't really add anything. Ooh, look at the deputy in the back.
I know. He's like, glasses. That's my favorite photo. That's me.
Barry Sheck's hair. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that they worked him into this episode. His two lines. Like, that's enough, Sheck.
That's right. But he had like a wisecrack, didn't he?
Healthy Contempt, Boyle Heights. You had on your notes, Dream Team gets a fax?
Yeah. They got the Ito's ruling via fax.
Oh, yeah.
That was a really cute scene.
Let me see the fax.
Oh, no.
How come that black female lawyer never has any lines? Who is that lady?
Because she's just like the... She's not as... Like, she's not on the dream... She's not the famous Dream Team.
Why even have her on the show then?
Because they're trying to be fair. They're trying to say that they did have a woman on their team, which they did.
She literally has no lines in the show.
She got to cry in this episode.
It's one of those things, though, where, like, she'll just be like, Like, she'll be nodding so that they don't give her any lines.
I like her. They should give her a few more lines.
The finale should be all her.
Oh, yeah. She needs a big speech.
Yeah, and they say, like, not guilty. And then, like, a camera pulls back, like, and that's how it really happened.
From
a woman who was on the dream team.
There's also a woman that was hired by Robert Kardashian to just go visit OJ every day.
What?
Yeah.
Hired?
Some pretty girl. They hired some, like, 25-year-old girl to, like, sit in that, not in a cell, in that room. He wasn't, like, really in jail. He had friends coming over and a girl go see him all the time.
What's that classified ad like? How do you find?
Looking for a conjugal visit.
You're just talking. Just talking to a murderer.
Oh, so let's just get to what it means to plead the fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's in, I think it's in the OJ 8 of
8. In the Furman part?
So I know that when you plead the fifth, you can't answer any questions. You can't, like, pick and choose what questions you're going to answer.
Oh, really? I thought you could.
Mm-mm. That's why when he said, I'm pleading the fifth, I'm taking that right, that's when Johnny Cochran asked him about planning the evidence.
That was great lawyering.
Mm-hmm.
But he had to just keep saying that.
He had to keep saying it. Because it's just saying, like, I choose not to participate at all. I actually think that was the right thing for Mark Furman to do.
But he couldn't have just gone, like, no, of course I didn't plant the evidence.
Well, when he, according to Murder in Brentwood, once the tapes were released, Marsha and Chris Darden didn't contact him at all. They just totally blanked him. He's like, they should have had me come in and we should have worked out what would happen when I went on the stand. They just totally they fucked up.
They funged up.
They funged up. Really
they funged bad. Up. Well, okay. Well, who knows what's going to happen next week on the show?
I don't know. You think he's going to get off?
I don't know. A lot of evidence both ways.
I don't know. We might have to deliberate.
Well, let's end with the joke. This one is not coming from the OJ joke book. Oh, okay. Well, we didn't add this. One more thing real quick. Marsha gets the custody of the kids. That was a sweet moment. Like, yeah. Oh, she might be losing professionally, winning personally.
Yeah.
Oh, primary custody. What's $6 million of taxpayer money?
Yeah, down the drain.
When you get primary custody over your Scientology husband.
Who needs?
I've been shot in the face.
Yeah.
That was the first husband.
Who needs my Scientologist ex-husband and my vegetable ex-husband?
I've got the Lizard King and I got my kids.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's do an OJ joke. So this one's not from the book. That's actually the creators told us.
Larry
told us. Yeah, Larry told us this in our private Q&A with him. This was not widely known to the public. So this is a knock-knock joke. Oh, knock-knock.
Who's there?
AC.
AC who?
You know who this is, damn it!
You know who it is. That's what you're supposed to say.
Doesn't he say damn it?
No, I think he's just saying, you know who it is. Open up.
I thought he said, well, open up. He's not really at the door. He's on the phone.
Oh, it's knock knock.
Well, but it's a joke. All right. Well, we'll look
messed that one up. I'm sorry.
We'll fact check the jokes. We'll leave the joking to me from now on. Yeah. I'll just in the book, the official book. Mm-hmm. But anyway, thank you for watching. We'll see you next week. And until then, this is Adam Papp again for JJ Stratford saying, don't squeeze the juice.